Will he not?
No. Lady Lufton sent her son £5,000 as a present.
Oh, that was very good of her.
Yes, wasn't it? I wish I had a mother.
I can recount something of the history of this business. There was an argument over money between Lord Lufton and Sowerby. One or two unsettled gambling claims. And Lufton, who was very angry about it, asked me to help resolve the conflict. Introduced me to Sowerby specifically for the purpose. Well, I found it impossible to believe that a man of Sowerby's standing could have attempted to defraud him. Lufton, I decided, may well have been in error, and I persuaded him to have the case referred to a private arbiter, a fellow recommended by Sowerby. The decision went against Lord Lufton to the tune of £5,000, and it is this sum which his mother has recently provided. But I must tell you, I know Sowerby rather better now than I did, and I have heard men talk of him in less than glowing terms. So whether indeed Lord Lufton was in error, I confess I'm not so certain.
Well, you see, Mr. Robarts, you are an especially valued commodity this afternoon. Most of the men have disappeared.
I suppose they've gone off to chase a fox again.
No, no, Miss Dunstable, they are in conference.
Yes, at the instigation of the Duke. They are to talk about politics. They're to talk about the future of the nation.
Oh, well, perhaps they'll do better at that than hunting foxes.
Have they any particular agenda, do you know, Mrs. Smith?
I do know, and I promised Harold that I wouldn't tell. They're planning to ditch the Prime Minister.
Are they? Is it in their power to ditch the Prime Minister?
They think so.
Why should they wish to ditch him?
Probably, Mr. Robarts, to show that it is in their power to do so.
Probably, yes. But they'll say, well, my husband will, that the country requires it, that the public mind is awake to the need for change. That the PM and his ministry must give way, or else the country cannot be saved.
Well, I understand very little about these things, of course, but I rather thought that our present Prime Minister had not been altogether unsuccessful.
You are right, Miss Dunstable, he has not, but that poses no difficulty. The argument will be that he has been too successful, too triumphant, altogether too haughty.
How curious.
Curious indeed. But if the ministry should be forced out within the year...
6 months is the timetable, I believe.
We shall know precisely when and where the plot was hatched.
Ah, evening, Mark.
Evening.
Come in. Close the door. Ah, I understand you're off home tomorrow.
That's right, Sowerby. First thing.
Well, I'm glad you could spare me half an hour. I need your advice.
Advice?
Advice. Assistance. The situation is, Mark, I'm hard up. Infernally so, just at the present. And I rather think that if I don't get hold of some ready cash very soon, I shall be ruined.
I'm sorry to hear it. Very sorry. Could not Harold Smith lend you the money?
Harold Smith? He's never lent a shilling in his life. It's deuced hard, Mark, but if I can't put my hands on £400 in the next 2 days, the whole game's up.
I'm very sorry, Sowerby.
Of course I'd ask Lufton, but he's not here.
Well, to be honest, I think Lord Lufton has obliged you enough. 5,000 is a tidy sum.
Oh, it is, it is. But none of that money came to me, you know. It all went to that ruffian, Tozer.
Tozer?
The vile moneylender I was compelled to have dealings with. You see, Mark, look, I don't mean to say a word against Lufton. Soul of honour, I'm sure. But he was wrong all through that wretched affair. And his mistake has cost me very dear. Mm. Because all the time we were disputing the matter, I had to make good the money that I knew he owed me. Had to borrow it. What's vexing, of course, is that this matter of the £400 has caught up with me now, just when I was about to put all my financial troubles far behind me.
Oh, with the help of Miss Dunstable, you mean?
The very same, if she'll have me.
Well, if you're short of cash, why not ask her for it?
Ask Miss Dunstable? Ask the woman I intend to marry? No, I've not descended quite so low. I'd rather lose her than do that.
Then why don't you set about marrying her? She seems fond enough of your society. You should go to her and have done with it.
Oh, yes, Mark, that's the point. Marrying Miss Dunstable would relieve me of all my difficulties, but I really can't marry her until the present problem is overcome. With regard to the £400, I mean. You see, Mark, if I had that money, I could get everything settled. Settle for good. I tell you what, Mark, if you could help me in this, I'd never forget it. Never. And there'll be a time, I'm sure, when I can do something for you.
Sowerby, I haven't got £400. Haven't even got 50.
Well, of course you don't. There isn't a man at Gatherum who has £400 at his banker's, unless it be the Duke. No, no, Mark. I wasn't expecting you to hand me the cash.
What is it you want, then?
Your name, dear fellow. Your name on the back of this bill. You've done this kind of thing before, I take it?
No, Sowerby, never.
Well, it's very simple. By signing here, you thereby give me permission to use your name and your cast-iron reputation in order to raise money not exceeding the amount specified on the bill. £400 in this case. Here's a pen.
Upon my word, I'd rather not sign, Sowerby.
Why? What are you afraid of? Mark, dear fellow, you'll never see or hear the bill again. I do assure you.
When would the bill be due?
In 3 months. See, it's written here.
And if you did not have the money by then, it would fall to me to pay the bill, would it not?
My dear Mark, I have always, always settled such bills by the time they're due. Always. And if you hear anything to the contrary, then I should very much like you to tell me. I mean, I've been short of money from time to time, but it's never quite come to that.
But as a clergyman, it would be very wrong of me.
As a clergyman? Oh, Mark, if you don't wish to help out a friend, then say so, but let's not have that sort of humbug, if you don't mind. Clergymen's names appear very frequently on the backs of bills. More so, I imagine, than any other class of men. Now, Mark, please. You won't throw me over when I'm so hard-pushed. Just right. Accepted. Mark Robarts, across there. And you can put the whole business out of your mind. But you will have obliged me, dear friend, forever.
I have done wrong. I knew as much the moment I left Sowerby's room, and straight away I began to remember things which for some reason I could not recall when I was with him. Things which Lord Lufton had told me concerning his quarrel with Sowerby, and stories I had heard elsewhere concerning Sowerby's unreliability in money matters. Oh, I have done wrong. Very wrong. Within 3 months, I'll be troubled again about that bill, I'm sure of it. Oh, why did I ever go to Gatherum Castle?
Ah, hello. Whoa, steady, old boy. You'll have me and your brother into the fire.
Come, Francis. I'll lift you up. There.
Thank you, Francis.
Now, Mark, let me have Harry and you can take off your coat. I wish you'd wrapped up more warmly. There's a chill wind today.
I was fine. Didn't notice it, my dear. Oh, but it is good to be back. There is nothing like being at home.
There's nothing like having you home, my dearest. It's the homecoming season, I think. Lord Lufton arrived at Framley Court early yesterday.
Oh, did he?
He's staying until March.
March?
Yes, I was surprised too. It's not like Lord Lufton to show such compliance.
No, Fanny, no, it is not. I imagine his mother's in good spirits.
She is triumphant. Indeed, her ladyship is in excellent humour about everything now, so you need not mention Gatherum Castle to her.
She was very angry, I suppose, when she heard that I was going.
Well, to tell you the truth, she was. She blazed up quite hot.
And said all manner of horrid things about me?
About the Duke, she did. She's never liked the Duke of Omnium, nor have I, Mr. Robarts, for that matter.
Oh, he's not as bad as he's painted. Did you and Lady Lufton quarrel?
Violently. And then she made peace. She was so perfectly kind, so full of love and truth and honesty. There's nobody quite like her, Mark.
That's true.
She's better by far than all the dukes that ever wore ermine and whatever it is that dukes wear.
Well, at least one of them wears horns and a tail, if you and her ladyship are to be believed. I will tell Fanny about the business with the bill. But not yet. Tomorrow, perhaps. Coming home has been so pleasant that I should not wish to spoil this day. £400. That's nearly half a year's income. And I have no savings to call on. Oh, why must I be ambitious? Do I not have at Framley Parsonage all that a man's heart could desire? Well, I am ambitious, and perhaps that is not too grave a fault. But thus far, for ambition's sake, the path I've followed has been a very sorry one indeed.
So, Mark, you have been among the Philistines.
Yes, most certainly I have. And I am exceedingly glad to be returned. Your stables are busy.
Yes, I brought all seven of my nags from Leicestershire. They're fine beasts. You must come for a ride today.
I'd like that, Lufton, thank you.
Good.
While I was among the Philistines...
Yes?
I heard that you've agreed a settlement with Sabi.
True, I have. Do you know at what price?
5,000 was mentioned?
Well, yes. That's on top of the 3,000 that I paid before. And all in a matter where, I tell you honestly, I didn't owe him a thing. Whatever I do in future, I'll have no more dealings with Sowerby. That's quite definite.
But he hasn't... Well, he hasn't cheated you.
Well, possibly, possibly not. He's been sharp at any rate. But it's finished now, and I intend to banish the whole wretched business from my mind.
Yes. You may be interested to know, however, that I too have had dealings with Sowerby.
You? When?
While I was at Gatherum Castle, I put my name to a bill for him. For £400.
You're joking. A man in your position would never do such a thing.
But I have, Lufton. He asked me the last night I was there, said no bill of his had ever yet been dishonoured.
What, what? My dear fellow, the pocketbooks of money dealers are stuffed full of his dishonoured bills. £400, you say?
Yes.
When does the bill fall due?
In 3 months.
Have you thought at all how you will find the money?
Well, I know I can't. Not in that time. I suppose that I would have to ask the bank to renew the bill and then pay it off by degrees.
And pay interest and bank expenses and commission into the bargain.
Yes. Of course, this is all assuming that Sowerby doesn't take up the bill himself.
Mark, he's as likely to do that as to take up the national debt.
He does have hopes of a profitable marriage.
Yes, so I gather. To the ointment of Lebanon woman. But even should he be successful, it would make no difference to you. Chaldicotts is mortgaged to the Duke of Omnium, so any money that Sowerby gets his hands on will pass straight to him. Small fries such as yourself, I fear, will not get a penny.
I have received sorrowful news. My dear father was struck last week by a sudden and rapid illness, and now he is no more. So I am journeying to Exeter for the funeral, and so on. His death could... Well, it could make a difference. To the matter of the bill, I mean. My father was not an unsuccessful man. And though I have brothers and sisters aplenty, there must be some prospect of my getting a windfall, must there not? Enough, at least, to cancel out the £400. Oh, you see what a wretched fellow I have become. Wretched indeed. My father, whom I loved, he is dead. But the grief I feel is already yielding, it seems, to hopes for his money.
And does the letter suggest when he intends to return?
Friday, Lord Lufton, is the most likely day.
Mm. Well, if that suits him, but I told him that he mustn't hurry back.
He also says that he is bringing one of his sisters with him, Lucy, who was living with her father. Mark has invited her to stay with us at the parsonage and, well, join our family. I hope that this is agreeable to you, Lady Lufton.
Oh, indeed. Mr. Robarts has done right. I take it that you approve the notion.
Yes, I do.
Good. I seem to remember the young lady. She was at your wedding, my dear.
Yes.
Rather small, is she not? And very retiring.
Small and retiring? Is that the best that can be said about her?
Ludovic, some young ladies must be small, and some at least ought to be retiring.
Well, she must have been very retiring. I don't remember her at all.
Well, I wouldn't say she is beautiful, but she is not plain, and she has a pleasant manner. Oh, I pray she is not too stricken in her grief. Come in. I thought I would see if you have everything you need.
Oh, yes, thank you.
Are you still very cold?
No. No, I have nearly thawed.
Well, dearest Lucy, I'm sure you will be used to us soon, and I hope, too, that we shall make you comfortable and as happy as you can be.
Oh, I will be happy here, with you and Mark. But, oh, poor Papa.
Oh, I know, my dearest.
Poor Papa.
I heard the will read while I was in Exeter. In my father's opinion, God's providence has already placed me in a position of relative financial ease, and since I am so comfortably situated, I am, as a result, to get nothing at all of my father's money. Not a shilling. It was hard, very hard, to smile and look gracious while this news was delivered, and I shall not say if I succeeded. Within me, though, my heart sank. What must I do now? One thing I ought to do is to delay no more, but tell Fanny straight away about this wretched bill of Sowerby's. But I cannot. I do not have the courage.
My dear, it is a great pleasure for me to be able to renew our acquaintance.
Thank you, Lady Lufton.
Though I wish it had not been in such unfortunate circumstances.
Yes.
I was wondering, Fanny, whether you might all be able to dine with us.
Thank you very much. You name the day, Lady Lufton. We never have many engagements.
Well, perhaps Thursday might be convenient. What do you think, Miss Robarts?
Oh, Lady Lufton, I...
You won't meet anyone, I assure you. Only my son. So it won't be like visiting. Fanny will tell you that going over to Framley Court is just like stepping from one room in the parsonage to another. Is that not so, Fanny?
Well, yes, indeed. Mark and I are invited over so often that I fear we are in danger of taking it for granted.
Miss Robarts, we think of ourselves as a sort of happy family here at Framley, and we're delighted to have the opportunity of including you in the menage.
Lady Lufton, you are so very kind, but I really...
Yes, my dear?
Well, I...
It was perhaps a little too soon.
Oh, yes, of course.
Oh, forgive me.
My dear, there is nothing to forgive.
She is very quiet, is Lucy, and always was so, says Mark, ever since she was a child. She is neither open nor demonstrative, as I would like her to be, has not thrown herself and her sorrows into my heart as I had hoped she would. But why should I be disappointed, simply because she does not do, perhaps, what I would do? She is different from me, for which both she and I should be thankful. And because she is different, I love and value her all the more.
Ah, Mrs. Robarts, how are you?
I'm very well, thank you.
Excellent. Now, Mrs. Robarts, your sister-in-law and I have not been formally introduced.
Oh, forgive me, Lucy, this is Lord Lufton.
I'm very pleased to meet you.
Likewise.
I'm surprised to see you on your own, Lord Lufton. I thought that Captain Culpepper was with you.
He was, but he's gone to... Whoosh, Gatherham Castle for a day's pheasant shooting. Don't tell my mother.
I won't, I promise. But there are other things I do wish to tell her. Is she at home?
She is.
Then I will see her now, I think.
Well, if Miss Robarts is going on to the parsonage...
Lucy?
Yes. Yes, I am.
Well, that's where I'm bound, too. So I will walk with Miss Robarts, if I may, and protect her from the evil spirits of the Framley Rose.
Thank you, Lord Lufton. Goodbye, then.
Miss Robarts, you have been here a long time, a month at least, without my having the pleasure of talking with you. My mother and I were beginning to think that you were being confined against your will, and that I would have to find a way of setting you free.
I have had a great sorrow lately.
Oh, yes, Miss Robarts. Forgive me, I was joking. Or trying to. I never knew my own father. But I can well understand what a loss you have had. For I met your father a few times when I was a boy.
Did you?
Yes. Yes, he came to Framley to consult with my mother about Mark's education. And mine, indeed, since Mark and I were schoolmates. And I remember that your father was very kind to me.
He was very kind to everyone.
I'm sure. And I'm sure, too, that he was adored by his family.
Oh, he was, Lord Lufton. Indeed he was. Such a dear, good man. No words from him were ever harsh or unpleasant. And he was as generous as the day.
I hope I haven't caused you distress by speaking of your father.
Distress? No. No, I am glad that you have spoken of him. And that I have too. Till today it has almost seemed that such talk was forbidden. Even with Mark. As if it was wrong to mention my father. Or as if it might intensify my grief. But nothing, I think, could be more welcome.
I gather you were conversing with Lord Lufton this afternoon.
Yes.
I hope you liked your new companion.
Yes, pretty well.
Pretty well? That's not very complimentary to his lordship.
I was not intending to be complimentary.
Lucy doesn't pay compliments, my dear. She's a great deal too matter-of-fact for that.
What I meant was that I had no real opportunity for judging. I was only with him for a few minutes.
Ah, but there are some of our sex, Lucy, who would give their eyes for a few minutes in that gentleman's company. He's valued very highly, you know. Has a facility with the ladies, can make himself agreeable to them at a mere half-minute's warning.
Well, perhaps he lacked such a warning in my case.
Poor sister. He'd come over here to chat with me about his horses. I fear he must have been thinking more about them than about you.
Yes. Yes, very likely.
Lady Lufton has repeated her kind invitation to dinner, and this time Lucy has felt able to accept it. And so, for the first time, she is at Framley Court. And there are other guests, too, aside from Mark and myself. I mean the Grantleys. Dr. Grantley, the Archdeacon of Barchester.
Good heavens, good heavens!
Mrs. Grantley, his wife.
No, 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 Mr. Robarts. The Hartletops, I'm afraid, are not at all in our line.
And the Grantleys' daughter, Griselda.
I should like a lemonade, please.
Griselda is very near to Lucy's age. Beautiful, decidedly, and tall and slight, but somewhat statuesque, perhaps. A little lacking in vivacity. Though if these be faults, I don't think Lord Lufton finds them so. There is, at any rate, enough about Miss Griselda Grantley to engage his attention. She plays the piano quite prettily.
I am inclined to think, Lady Lufton, that Robarts could not have helped it. After all, he was specifically asked to preach at Charlicott's, so I understand. It would have been strange to refuse.
But then, Archdeacon, then he went on to Gatherum Castle.
Gatherum Castle? Oh, dear.
Such a dangerous house, you know. Such horrid people there.
Yes, indeed. Yet, though the castle air was impure, it was less impure, I am certain, because Mr. Robarts was present. Oh, but good heavens, what blasphemy.
Archdeacon!
Yes, my dear?
Griselda is at the piano.
Yes, my dear. How could I possibly talk of impure air? The bishop was at Gatherum Castle, too, and the bishop's wife.
Yes, Dr. Grantley, they were there.
And while we are listening, some of us, to Griselda's recital, I notice that Lucy has removed herself at some distance, is sat in a corner of the room leafing through a book. And in time, Lord Lufton notices this, too, and quietly approaches her.
Miss Robarts? Miss Robarts?
Yes?
I fear you have cut us all.
Oh, well, I didn't mean to.
Of course you didn't. The fault was ours in leaving you to yourself.
I'm quite used to being alone, Lord Lufton.
Then we must break you of the habit. You must become a dear friend, as Mark is and his wife. You won't refuse the offer, will you?
No, I won't refuse it.
The Archdeacon and Mrs. Grantley will have gone in a couple of days. But Griselda is to remain for Christmas, and you shall stay here too, if you are willing, and get to know her better. She is very handsome, is she not?
Oh, yes. Very handsome. Nobody can doubt that.
Sowerby! Sowerby!
Why, it's young Robarts.
Haven't seen you for a good while. It's very nearly 3 months, in fact. Sarvey, I'd like a quick word with you.
A quick word at a quick pace, eh? Mind the jump.
It's concerning that bill I signed for you.
A bill?
Yes. For £400. I want to know what you're doing about it.
You signed a bill for £400? Rather green of you, wasn't it?
Yes. Perhaps it was. I'd like to know what your intentions are, nonetheless.
What a ruffian you are. Spoiling my day, sport. Anyone but a vicar would be too good a Christian to inflict such a cruelty. A bill for 400, did you say? Tozer has it, the money dealer.
And what will Tozer do with it?
Use it to make money, whichever way he can.
Will he bring the bill to me on the 20th?
20th?
When the bill's due.
Oh, no. Cat doesn't kill a mouse since he's played with it. Oh, my word, Robots. You are green. Deliciously so.
You see, I wouldn't want anyone visiting me at the parsonage. And
No, there's not the slightest fear of that. Look! Look! He's away! Over by Cosset's barn! Come on! Tally-ho! And never mind, Tozer! Sufficient for the day is the evil thereof!
I have received a letter from Sowerby. And a bill. For a brief moment, I rejoiced. I thought it was the bill for the £400 which Sowerby was yielding up. But no, it is a second bill. Sowerby says that since neither of us can raise the money, which is now indeed more than £400, for the money dealer has his perquisites and pickings to be taken care of, a second bill for £500 must be signed and signed straight away, or else I may begin to be pestered by the money dealer and by lawyers too. Dear God, I have been such a fool, and I'll be a double fool if I sign a second time. That first folly, that act of madness at Gatherum Castle, has thrown me into deep and dangerous waters, and my efforts to escape, I fear, may only serve to choke me and pull me down still further.
Mr. Crawley, good morning.
Morning, Mr. Robarts.
You and your family are in good health, are you?
Quite well, through God's mercy.
I had not expected to see you in Lady Lufton's gig.
She sent it round, asked me to visit her.
Did she indeed?
It's an important matter, I hope, for I've much to be doing in my parish. Good day, Mr. Robarts.
Hogglestock is the name of Crawley's parish. A poor parish, not part of Lady Lufton's property. And Crawley and his family are pitiably poor themselves. Nor is it easy to extend them any kindness, for Crawley is a stern, proud man. A man who seeks help from God alone, who has no ambition. A man, you might say, as unlike myself as could be found. I should not much care to be Mr. Crawley of Hogglestock, but I do not much care at present to be Mark Robarts of Framley. For I have acted very foolishly, very wrongly, and I have brought upon myself the threat of utter ruin.
Mr. Crawley, I requested your presence here so that I might ask for your help with regard to my own vicar here at Framley, Mr. Mark Robarts.
Ah, yes.
He is an excellent parish clergyman.
You think so?
Oh, yes, Mr. Crawley, I do. He is excellent. However...
Indeed, indeed. However...
He got this living at such a young age, Mr. Crawley, that he is not perhaps quite as steady as I could wish him to be. The fault, no doubt, was as much mine as his in placing him in such a position so early in his life.
Yes, no doubt.
But that's past remedy now. Mr. Robarts will in time become a credit to his profession. Of that I'm sure. But at present...
He finds it hard not to succumb to temptation.
In some measure, yes.
Spends much of his time away from Framley, I'm told, at places such as Chaldicotts.
Ah, but...
And Gatherum Castle, the Duke of Omnium's place.
Yes, indeed. Let us not, however, paint too black a picture of Mr. Robarts. It was only a few occasions that he went away, you know. And that business is all behind us now. He understands my views on it.
Perhaps. But there's the hunting also.
Ah, well, it is the hunting which I wanted to discuss with you.
He's off with the hounds 2 or 3 times a week, I understand.
Oh, no, Mr. Crawley. Very seldom above once, I'm sure. And even then it's chiefly with a view to being with my son, who is a particular friend of his.
I don't see how that makes it any better, Lady Lufton.
Do you not?
In truth, no. Hunting is a vicious pastime. Whatever one's reasons for indulging in it, it is vicious and cruel and promotes profligacy and turpitude.
Well, I don't know about that. But it is at any rate unbecoming in a clergyman. I would tell him so myself, but I rather fear he might feel aggrieved, as might my son, if I were to interfere personally in this regard. So, I wonder if I might ask you to see Mr. Robarts and try to encourage him to discontinue the pastime.
The bill which Mr. Sowerby sent me this morning lies here on my desk, as yet unsigned. I must sign this bill, says Sowerby, and without delay, for the first bill has fallen due, and since neither he nor I can find the necessary £400, he must draw on my name for a further £500. I should never have got into this mess. Should never have taken such a risk to oblige a man like Sowerby. Yes?
Mr. Robarts.
Crawley?
I've come here on unpleasant business.
Unpleasant business?
Yes, Mr. Robarts, but I am not one to flinch from it.
No, Mr. Crawley, I'm sure. Do take a seat. He cannot mean the bill I've signed, surely. The Vicar of Hogglestock cannot possibly have learned anything about that.
Well, Mr. Robarts, I shall go to the root of the matter. There is nothing like going to the root of the matter, in my view.
No, indeed.
People are saying that your present mode of life is one that does not befit a soldier in Christ's army.
People? Which people?
Those around you. The people of your neighbourhood who would look to you as a lamp to guide them, but who find instead that you are wont to consort with jockeys and hunters, that you gallop after the hounds and take your place with the vainest of worldly pleasure-seekers.
So it is not the bill. That's some relief. Lady Lufton has put him up to this, encouraged him to preach at me, if he needed encouragement.
Mr. Robarts, if what is said about you is true, then it is very wrong. For you owe it to those around you to live a godly, cleanly life, and you owe it also, in a much higher way, to your Father who is in heaven. I would ask you, therefore, are you doing your best to lead a godly, cleanly life?
Well, Mr. Crawley...
Are you?
There are but few of us, I suppose, who could safely say yes to such a question.
Perhaps... But are there very many, do you think, who would find the question as painful to answer as you do? And even if there were, are you content to be numbered among them? If you are, then I am mistaken in you. Speak, my brother. If it be possible, open your heart.
I have done wrong.
Yes! Yes, you have. There has been a terrible falling off, Mr. Robarts. Terrible indeed. But you are not, I know it, a thoughtless sinner, such as many of those parishioners of yours whose sins it is your duty to crush. You have high aspirations, or you did have, certainly. But you are become a hunting parson, and you ride with a happy mind among blasphemers and mocking devils. Oh, Mr. Robarts, what are you? If you are not an ignorant sinner, must I call you a hypocrite?
No, not a hypocrite. Not a hypocrite.
No, I don't believe you are. You are one who, through carelessness, has stumbled in the dark and who has bruised and cut his feet. Henceforth, you must be wary. You must walk cautiously among the thorns and rocks, cautiously, yet boldly, with manly courage, and yet with Christian meekness, as all of us should walk through this vale of tears.
I am back at the parsonage now. I spent Christmas at Framley Court, with Lady Lufton, with Lord Lufton, her son, and with Griselda Grantly, the Archdeacon's daughter, who is very beautiful, or considered so. I did not altogether enjoy the time I spent there, for I'm not at all used to such society. Often felt I would be far happier with a good book, a good chair, and a good fire. But there were some occasions which afforded some pleasure. I mean, in particular, when Lord Lufton contrived to remove himself from Miss Grantly and talk with me. We would talk most pleasantly, he and I, grew increasingly well acquainted. And now, I think, Lord Lufton and I have become, well, good friends.
Fanny, I wish to say a few words about your sister-in-law.
Oh, is there anything wrong?
No, my dear. Nothing is wrong, but it's always well to be on one's guard.
On one's guard, Lady Lufton?
You know how fond we are of Lucy. She is a nice, good girl, and we did so much enjoy her being with us at Christmas.
Well, she enjoyed it too. She was greatly distressed, as you know, by her father's death, but she seems so much happier now.
Yes, and I am pleased for her. She is, as I say, a good girl. But, Fanny, dearest, the truth is, she and my son are getting into a way of being too much together.
Oh?
Of talking to each other too exclusively.
I see.
Oh, please understand, it is not that I suspect any evil in this matter. Suspiciousness is not in my nature.
Indeed not, Lady Lufton.
But you see, Lucy may be under the impression that Lord Lufton means more by way of his attentions to her than he really does.
You don't think Lucy is in love with him, surely?
Oh, no, no, no. No! If I thought that, my dear, I should recommend that your sister-in-law be sent away altogether. Oh, no, no. I simply feel that it would be sensible if a little management were employed. I'm sure that you understand me, Fanny, dear, with your perfect tact and good sense.
I can't believe that there's anything in it, Lady Lufton.
I'm sure there isn't. Lucy is, as I say, a nice girl, a good girl, and it would be sad if anything were to interrupt the cordial relations that exist between Framley Court and Framley Parsonage. So, Fanny, my dear, it might be prudent if you were to have a little word with her.
I know, of course, how keen Lady Lufton is that her son should marry Griselda Grantly. She and Griselda's mother have, I believe, come to a decided agreement that the match will be made. But I confess that when her ladyship spoke about offering Lucy words of caution, I did not really see the need.
Ah, Mrs. Robarts, good day to you.
And to you, Lord Lufton.
Lord Lufton wants me to learn to ride.
Oh, indeed.
This horse would carry her beautifully. He really would. His only fault is he's too soft-mouthed.
Soft-mouthed? I suppose that's the same sort of thing as a man being soft-hearted.
Exactly. You must manage both of them with a very light hand. 2 days, that's all it would take. To learn to ride, I mean. Do you think she should try, Mrs. Robarts?
Lucy has no riding habit, I'm afraid.
Well, we can soon remedy that. There's one in the house, I'm sure. My sister left it on her last visit.
Oh, but Lucy wouldn't dream of taking such a liberty with your sister's possessions.
Oh, indeed, I would not. Nor, secondly, would I dream of taking Lord Lufton's horse. Thirdly, I would be a good deal too frightened to ride it at all. And fourthly, a great many other reasons besides.
But that's nonsense.
Oh, no more so, Lord Lufton, than your talk of soft mouths and light hands. Now, it's getting cold.
Yes, it is.
So Mrs. Robarts and I will wish you, Lord Lufton, goodbye. I wonder what Lady Lufton would have said if I'd agreed to the riding lessons.
I don't think she'd have liked it.
Oh, I'm sure she wouldn't. I sometimes wonder if she likes Lord Lufton talking to me at all.
She certainly doesn't like it, Lucy, when she sees him flirting with you.
Flirting? Has he been flirting?
He has been paying you attentions.
Have I been flirting with him?
I didn't say that.
But Lady Lufton said it, I suppose.
Lucy!
And she asked you to lecture me about it.
Not lecture you. Put you on your guard.
On my guard?
Lucy, my dear, nobody is saying that you have done anything wrong. Quite the opposite. Your refusing Lord Lufton's offer just now is proof enough of that.
I must be on my guard nonetheless, against falling in love.
Well?
But Fanny, even if I were to fall in love with Lord Lufton, would it really be anything wrong?
My dear Lucy.
I wonder if Griselda Grantly was advised to be on her guard when she was staying at Framley Court. Lord Lufton should have a label put on him, as if he were a bottle. Danger. Poison. Then young innocents such as I might avoid the possibility of a tragic error.
Oh, Lucy. Well, there will be no error in this case. The danger of this particular bottle has now been pointed out to you. Lord Lufton is labelled, and you, therefore...
I am on my guard. Yes. I dote with my sister-in-law, or try to when she spoke about Lord Lufton. But it is no joking matter, I see that. Lord Lufton has made no absolute show of affection, has said nothing, done nothing in that way. But I'm aware that in our recent conversations, he has become more familiar, more intimate than he was before, more so perhaps than ordinary friendship should permit. What his true feelings are towards me, I cannot tell. I cannot tell what my own feelings are towards him. Whether simply I am flattered by his attentions, or perhaps am touched by something deeper. But I know that there is danger here. And Lady Lufton is right. Fanny is right. To put me on my guard.
I call to say farewell. I'm leaving for town tomorrow.
Oh, indeed.
Heaven knows when we shall see each other again.
Next winter, perhaps?
Yes, for a day or two, I suppose. One can't tell.
No, at least you can't. I shall be here, I've no doubt, for I'm not of the migratory tribe myself.
I wish you were, Lucy. You should be. For in other respects, you know, you show a strong sense of adventure. Which is why I like you so much. You have spirit.
Lord Lufton.
You've managed to get out of the old-fashioned grooves, and you like to act as your own guide.
Well, if I have left the old grooves, I mean to go back to them, I assure you.
And perhaps, Lucy, you have already begun to try. I feel, you know, that there is some estrangement between us, that in the past few days we have not been such friends as we were. I suppose my mother is the cause of all this.
She has said nothing to me, at least.
Oh, of course, she is as loving a mother as a son could wish for, but so great is her love that she cannot let me choose my friends for myself. Or indeed, choose my... Oh, Lucy, I cannot think that you have ceased to feel some regard for me.
No, Lord Lufton. I still feel some regard for you.
Some warm regard?
Well, yes. And it was very foolish of me to do so.
Foolish?
Yes, Lord Lufton. It was foolish indeed ever to leave that old-fashioned groove of mine, though I admit it was pleasant to appear independent and to indulge in an open friendship with you. No doubt your rank, which is so different from my own, made it seem attractive all the more.
That's nonsense.
Oh, but I'm sure it did. Oh, Lord Lufton, what will the world say of me if I allow this friendship to continue?
The world?
Yes, for I am not such a philosopher that I can disregard the world. Though you perhaps can afford to do so. Well, the world, I think, will say this. That I have set my cap at a young lord.
No!
And the young lord, in return, has made an utter fool of me.
No, Lucy! The world shall say no such thing! Oh, Lucy, my own Lucy, my heart's best friend!
Oh, please!
My love, my chosen love. And soon, my wife.
Lord Lufton, this is very wrong!
Wrong? Why? May you not marry me? May you not learn to love me?
I shall not try to learn.
But if you were to try...
No, no.
Can you not love me?
Lord Lufton, you have no right to press me further.
Oh, but I have every right. For I must learn the truth. My happiness depends on it, Lucy. I love you. love you with all my heart, and I must know how your heart stands towards me.
I cannot love you. I cannot.
Then God help me, for I am the most wretched man on earth. I shall take the first train to town tomorrow.
Oh, is there a need for you to go so early?
Yes, Mother. Yes, there is.
Oh, I see. Very well. Oh, Ludovic, I have received a letter from Mrs. Grantly.
Yes?
And she has agreed that Griselda will stay with me when I'm at Bruton Street.
Ah, oh, how nice.
We'll see something of you there, I trust, my dear. It wouldn't do for Griselda to be dull now, would it?
Of course it wouldn't.
You know, she's a very beautiful young girl.
She's not exactly plain, it's true.
She is very beautiful, I assure you. And there are many men who find her so, Ludovic. Many men.
No doubt there are, but I still don't think she'll set the Thames on fire.
I should hope not, Ludovic. If Griselda was the sort of girl who sets the Thames on fire, I should not wish to have her in my house. I don't like such girls, nor I'm certain do you.
This is a surprise, Sowerby.
Yes, your dear wife thought so too. A fine lady, but not, I think, my greatest admirer. You've been telling her dreadful things about those bills, I suppose.
I've told her nothing about them.
Quite right. No reason to bother her. No reason, indeed, to bother yourself. Oh, thank you, by the way, for signing that second bill. You'll find it will remove all difficulties.
Yes, Sowerby, until 3 months have passed and the bill falls due.
Oh, by that time, dear Mark, I shall have made my grand alliance with the wealthy Miss Dunstable. And you, perhaps, will no longer be merely the Vicar of Framley.
I don't understand.
Well, you've heard, no doubt, of the sad death of Dr. Burslem, the Barchester prebendary.
Yes.
You must all die some day. No doubt you have advised your parishioners as much several times over. Mark, the office is worth 600 a year, and there's a house in Barchester to go with it. And, of course, very few duties. Someone must succeed poor Dr. Burslem, and it seems to me, Mark, that you might do so as well as any other.
Well, Mr. Robarts, I congratulate you.
Oh, it's a little too early for that. I've not been made prebendary yet, you know. But I am advised...
By Mr. Sowerby, you mean?
Yes, by Mr. Sowerby. I am advised that since Mr. Sowerby's brother-in-law is now in the government...
Ah, yes. Mr. Harold Smith has become Lord Petty Bag, I believe.
He has. With Mr. Smith in the government, as I say, I should have some prospect of success.
Well, then, I must congratulate you also in your powerful new patron.
I trust you share my view, Lady Lufton, that the benefice is one which I can hold without any detriment to my work here at Framley.
I hope it is, at least.
But you do not think I should refuse it?
Well, Mr. Robarts, at such short notice, I am hardly prepared to advise you. But you seem anyway to have made up your mind, so I don't suppose I need give the matter much consideration. I wish you joy and good fortune, Mr. Robarts.
My dear wife has no more enthusiasm for Sowerby's plan than Lady Lufton. She has said little about it directly, but that of itself is a sign of her lack of approval. She fears a Greek from Chaldecott's bearing gifts, that's clear. But it would be folly to refuse the offer. Here is something paid back in return for those days spent among the Chaldecott set. Here is the value, surely, of knowing men of influence and power. I am to go up to town tomorrow to see how Sowerby has moved things on.
Oh, men in office never make distinct promises. They won't even admit the likelihood of night following day. But listen, Mark, even if Harold Smith should let us down, the matter has been opened with the Duke of Omnium.
The Duke?
Yes, my dear fellow. He's indicated that he'll happily put in a word on our behalf.
I see.
It's not his way, no, not at all. Wouldn't have said he'd do it if he didn't like you. So you see, it was as well you made his acquaintance, was it not? Your visit to Gatherum Castle is already reaping dividends, I think.
I'm very grateful to the Duke. And, of course, to you, sir.
No need. Oh, before I forget, there's another little favour I can confer. That horse of mine you rode last month.
Yes, I'm afraid I'm not interested. I did tell you.
He's yours for £130. Mark, it's dirt cheap for 100 of that class.
No, Sowerby.
And you wouldn't have to find any cash.
Oh, would I not?
No. We deduct the 130 from the amount that's on those wretched bills you signed. So, you pay no cash and you get a fine horse. What could be more convenient?
So you return to Framley tomorrow morning?
Yes, Lufton. I was with Sowerby today. There's a chance of my becoming the prebendary of Barchester.
Yes, I heard. It was about Sowerby that I wished to talk to you, and about a certain money dealer whom Sowerby employs. A fellow by the name of Tozer. You know of him, of course.
Well, Sowerby's spoken of him a few times, but I've never met the fellow.
I have. Yesterday. He forced his way into my rooms when I was dressing for dinner. Told me that if I didn't find £800, and quickly, he'd start proceedings.
But surely, Lufton, all that business of yours with Sowerby is settled.
I thought it was. Settled at great cost. Sooner than have a fuss, I paid through the nose. Or at least Mother did. But now, it seems, having succeeded with me once, Sowerby's greedy enough to try his luck again. He's claiming that I have failed to honour a bill, when in fact it was honoured long ago. I tell you, Robarts, he won't succeed. If it goes on this way, I'll expose the whole affair, my entire financial involvement with Sowerby, and it can go before a jury. I won't allow Sowerby to squeeze me like an orange. And you can advise him as much when you next see him.
Lufton, I hope you don't think that I am a party to what has been going on.
Well, my recent dealings with the man have been through you, have they not?
Yes, but my intention was to oblige you both. This is unreasonable, you know. This is unjust. I acted as ambassador between the two of you, at your own particular request. And in return, I am accused of assisting in a swindle.
I bring no accusation against you, Robarts. But I know that you have your own undertaking with Sowerby. You told me so yourself.
Yes, to accommodate him, I did put my name to a bill.
Only to one?
Well, no.
Two bills you have signed. Totalling £900, I believe. All of which, Robarts, you will have to make good.
Perhaps.
And the world will tell you, of course, that this £900 is the fee that you have had to pay.
Fee?
Yes, Robarts. To enable you to become prebendary of Barchester.
Ah, Mr. Prebendary. I thought you'd left for home.
That was my intention, but I wanted to speak to you again. You see, I have decided that I shall not be Mr. Prebendary. I have had second thoughts.
But, my dear Robarts, the thing's all settled. Settled quite definitely. I heard this morning.
Well, if an offer is made to me, Sowerby, I must decline it.
Why?
Because if I accept, it will seem as if I have purchased the position.
Purchased it? How?
By giving you financial assistance. Those two bills of yours.
Oh, Robarts!
I couldn't bear it, Sowerby, if the appointment was met with gossip and suspicion.
It won't.
But if word gets out concerning the bills...
My dear Robarts, my dear Prebendary, you have not purchased your new office, and no one can conceivably claim that you have. Let me confide in you. My brother-in-law, Lord Petty Bag, though he may be, has had little, well, nothing indeed, to do with the appointment.
Oh?
It transpires that it was the Duke of Omnium alone who recommended you to the Prime Minister.
Was it? In truth?
It was. I heard it from Fothergill, the Duke's agent. Robarts, if you continue, under these circumstances, to talk of giving up your new position, then I shall believe you to be insane. Until such time, I shall be pleased to regard you as the worthy prebendary of Barchester.
Ludovic, it's so lovely to see you.
Are you enjoying London, Mother?
Oh, I find it hard to do that. But it is expected of me, I'm afraid, to spend the season here.
And what has become of Miss Griselda Grantly this evening?
Nothing has become of her, Ludovic. She frequently retires at this hour, Unless we are out visiting, of course.
Ah, talking of which, Mrs. Harold Smith is holding her party tomorrow. Have you been invited?
Griselda and I have indeed been invited. I imagine it will be a very large and a very extravagant affair.
I certainly hope so.
Quite extravagant enough to take care of 3 months' salary for the new Lord Petty Bag.
Are you and Miss Grantly going?
We are not.
Oh.
That is, it was not our intention to go. As you are aware, I do not have much time for Mr. Sowerby's sister. But if you are intending to be there, Ludovic...
Oh, I'll be there.
Then perhaps we shall change our minds.
Miss Grantley.
Yes?
Lord Dumbello, we met at my mother's, Lady Hartletop.
Yes.
Fine weather.
Cold.
Bitterly so. But you are well, I hope?
I think I'm well.
Oh, excellent. I'm well too, uncommonly well. Perhaps we should dance.
Yes. Perhaps.
But I'm just as happy not to, whichever you prefer. Yes, it's been deuced cold today.
And are you keeping well, Miss Dunstable?
I am always well, Mrs. Smith. It is my doctor who is prone to sickness.
Oh, now, when was the last time we met?
We were at Gatherum Castle, I believe, and before then at Chaldicott's, my brother's place.
Oh, yes! Forgive me. Oh, society seems to demand one a very nomadic life, I find. One goes so much from house to house, it is not easy to remember which house is which. But I do remember, Mrs. Smith, that at Chaldicott's you were not Mrs. Smith at all, but Lady Papua of New Guinea.
Yes, indeed. That dreadful lecture my husband gave.
I gather he is in the government now.
He is, Miss Dunstable, which seems to have cured him of his South Sea obsession.
Oh.
He has been made Lord Petty Bag, you know.
Lord Petty Bag! Oh, splendid! And so you must be Lady Petty Bag, must you not?
Yes.
Lady Papua. Lady Petty Bag. Oh, heaven knows what title you'll have next. I do find politics somewhat confusing, though, don't you? When we were at Chaldicott's, or was it Gatherum Castle? You confided in me that your husband and others were plotting the Premier's downfall.
Ah.
The entire ministry, I believe, was soon to be dumped.
Yes, Miss Dunstable, there were thoughts, it's true, which moved in that direction. And perhaps, you see, the Prime Minister had caught wind of the disquiet, had decided at last to show some wisdom, seek new strength, infuse fresh blood into the ailing body of his government.
Yes, of course. And all through a single appointment. How long will it be, do you think, before we notice the full effect of your husband's promotion?
Lord Dumbello and I were going to dance.
Yes, Miss Grantley.
But then we didn't.
Oh, well. Even being about to dance is an achievement for Lord Dumbello, I suppose. Do you like London?
Yes, I do.
Ah. I'm afraid you must have found things extremely tedious when you were with us at Framley.
No.
It was a great bore, I tell you, when you went away. There wasn't a soul around worth speaking to, not a soul. I was all for hanging myself in the park next morning. But then it rained.
You had your mother to talk to?
Yes, indeed. Dear mother.
And there was also Miss Robarts.
Oh, yes. Lucy Robarts.
You admire Miss Robarts, do you not?
Well, I like her. She's clever, I think. But I saw next to nothing of her after you left.
You've enjoyed yourself, I hope.
Oh, yes, Lady Lufton.
You bestowed a good many smiles upon my son during the evening.
Well, I danced with him 2 or 3 times.
You couldn't have danced with him too often for my liking, Griselda. It's very pleasant to see Ludovic dancing with my friends. Lord Dumbello, I think, didn't dance with you at all.
No.
I must tell you, my dear, he admires you very much. Ludovic, that is.
Oh, no. I'm sure he doesn't.
Well, I think you'll find that I am right. My dear, perhaps a mother is not the most impartial judge of her own son, but in my view, Ludovic is a young man of an excellent disposition. And if there should be anything between you and him...
There isn't, Lady Lufton.
But if there ever should be, my dear, I, for my part, would do nothing to oppose it.